Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Electricity prices are through the roof. Australia's energy system is up the putt. Since the national electricity market was suspended for a short time last month, we've had what's been described as a perfect storm in the power market. We've had the war in Ukraine, aging coal power stations, cold weather. That's why our solar expert, Finn Peacock, is in the Nightlife House tonight. He's an electrical engineer, author of The Good Solar Guide. He runs the website Solar Quotes. Australians are one of the biggest uptakers of solar energy in the world. So how much money can you save? Where does solar fit within our mix of energy sources? And what's the latest when it comes to solar and how many Australians are taking it up and what kind of rebates you can get? Hey, Finn, welcome back to Nightlife.
Thank you very much.
Now, I know you are here to give practical advice, but let's ask you, what's your take on what's happened with the Australian energy market over the past couple of months?
Well, it's been interesting, hasn't it? Well, what we're seeing is that electricity prices are front and centre in the media, and that's just created a surge of interest in solar in Australia. Our website, the traffic has been off the charts in the last month.
All right. So a lot of people saying, look, if I've been thinking about solar, now's the time to do it.
Yes. Solar's one of those things. A lot of people get it now. They don't have to be convinced that it works and it's on the to-do list. And when you have, a crisis like this, and when you get people talking about electricity bills going up anywhere between 20% and doubling, that really gets people off the fence and gets them to tick that one off the to-do list. We've seen incredible interest in solar, and also interest in batteries has also tripled. So yeah, it's good when you run a solar website.
It certainly is. What do you have figures, Finn, about how many Australians now have solar on their roofs?
It's about one in three dwellings in Australia has solar, so about 30%, and that is the highest per capita uptake in the world.
Is it really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've got the most sun, I think, hands down. And are there states where that is, where there is more solar on the roofs than in other states?
It's a kind of two-horse race between South Australia and Queensland, depending on when you look at the data. South Australia might be in front per capita, or it might be Queensland. But all of them are pretty close. Generally, the states with the highest electricity prices, so that's South Australia, that's driving uptake in South Australia, and then Queensland obviously is really good for sun. So, yeah, those two states, it's really popular. But it's popular all over Australia, even in Hobart.
Yeah. So Western Australia, I mean, we've heard that they've been relatively immune from the gas crisis because of that embargo and exporting all of the state's gas. Is it still, you've got a lot of sun there, obviously. Is it still got a large penetration there?
Yeah, Western Australia's got really good penetration. And that's the bad news about Western Australia is they have a feed-in tariff that's set by the government in Perth, and that is really stingy. That's as low as 2.5 cents a kilowatt hour. So that's a bit mean. But despite that, Perth does have the cheapest solar in Australia, and that's for a number of factors. There's a lot of competition. There's a lot of standardization of sizes because of the rules. Most people get a 6.6 kilowatt system, so they have the cheapest solar in Australia, but they also have one of the worst feed-in tariffs. So the two kind of even each other out.
But right, yeah, it's very popular. You might pay less to sort of get it all set up, but then it might take you a bit longer to repay that or to make the money back on it.
Yeah, it depends on how much solar. You save with solar in two ways. You save from not consuming grid electricity and consuming solar instead. That's where, for most people, most of the savings are. And then any solar that's surplus to your house's requirements gets exported to the grid, and that's where you should get paid a feed-in tariff. So if in WA, if you, it's a fairly affluent state, if you have a pool, you have a big house, you have a big air conditioner, you generally self-consume a lot of that solar yourself. So the feed-in tariff is less important in those situations.
Yeah. So give us a sort of comparison then. What are the feed-in tariffs like around the country? Who's the most generous?
Well, in South Australia, I have an investment property where I'm still getting 22 cents a kilowatt hour. I think AGL might have forgotten about me there, so I hope they're not listening. And that's very rare.
Right. Is that because it was set up some time ago?
That was set up some time ago, yes. And I'm still waiting for the letter telling me it's dropping. Generally, we're seeing people can still get, if they shop around, because it does depend on the retailer in most states, you can still get up to 12 cents for a feed-in tariff. And like I say, the worst well, in theory is zero. If you're getting a zero feed-in tariff, then, you know, get another retailer. But the worst mandated feed-in tariff is WA, where it's 2.5 cents at the moment.
So you said it depends on the retailer. So it's not a standard rate for each state. You can actually shop around within the various retailers.
It depends on the state. So in WA, it's mandated. In regional Queensland, it's mandated. Most other places in Australia, you can shop around, and it depends on the retailer, because we have a competitive electricity retail market. Retailers do want solar owners as customers, and one of the levers they've got to attract those customers is to offer a more generous feed-in tariff than the competitors. So yes, you can shop around.
All right, I might take Sue in Geelong on this point, because Sue, you actually want to have a chat about the feed-in tariffs for solar.
Yeah, hi, how are you going?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I've just got a query. We just got an email from our electricity provider, just letting us know that there's going to be an increase in our rates, but at the same time, they said that they're going to drop our feed-in tariff. We're currently on, I think it's 6.5, but they're going to drop that down to 5.5. Can they do that?
They can do that. So in Victoria, you have a mandated minimum feed-in tariff. So that's the minimum feed-in tariff that you have to be offered, and that has just dropped. So it sounds like your retailer is taking advantage of that. What you can do, though, is you can shop around and look for retailers that are offering a better feed-in tariff, and hopefully you will find one.
Yeah, so are you locked into some kind of contract on that?
No, not at all. So I was just a little bit sort of surprised, because I thought it's a bit, you know, it's sort of a bit rude, I guess. You know, they let you know they're going to put it up, that's fine. But then at the same time, then it's sort of like a double whammy, because now they're going to drop our tariff, our feed-in rate as well. So we cop it both ends, I guess. So
I agree, it is rude. You know, the average wholesale electricity price in Australia has jumped recently. It's been all over the media. And then you get a letter saying, we're going to pay you less for your electricity. You know, that's pretty jarring. Their argument would be that electricity during the day is the least valuable because of all the solar. Even that withstanding, I personally don't think they should be dropping feed-in tariffs at the moment when the average wholesale price has gone up so much.
Yeah, because you try and do the right thing and get solar and stuff and help out, and then, yeah, it just doesn't seem right. Anyway, thanks so much. I guess we'll just have to shop around and look for somebody else.
Well, one of the best ways to shop around if you do have solar, you will have a smart meter, because you need that to measure the exports. And there's a really good government website that's been massively improved recently, and that's called Energy Made Easy. And what you can do there is, if you say you want to compare electricity, and then you click on the button that says, I want to use my meter data, it's very clever. You put in your meter number, which is called an NMI, which you can get from your electricity bill. I think it's a 9 or 12 digit number. And it instantly connects to your meter, downloads your last 12 months worth of electricity usage data, and does its best to work out which retailer would give you the best balance of high feed-in tariff and low usage tariff, and would have given you the lowest bill in the last 12 months. So that's actually really, I'm quite impressed with that website, and it's definitely worth checking out.
All right, so good luck with that. I hope you find someone who'll manage to be less stingy with you. So I didn't realise, Finn, I haven't gone down the solar pathway yet, although, of course, it's on my list, but I didn't realise that you actually shopped around for a different retailer. Now, is that a different retailer who's already supplying your power, or are you basically going to one to say, do my solar and do the power that I'm going to take out of the grid as well?
So they're usually different companies. So there's an electricity retailer, that's the person that bills you for your electricity and pays you the feed-in tariff for your solar. If you, Origin, AGL, Energy Australia, the big guys, they do also sell solar, but you can also get solar, and most people get solar from smaller specialist solar installation companies, and that's a completely separate, that's the solar retailer, not the electricity retailer.
So if you go with one of those smaller companies, you'll still have to do your business with one of the big companies?
Yes, you still need to, you still need to buy your electricity from a dedicated electricity retailer. Now, that might be one of the big guys, but it might be one of the, there's quite a few smaller retailers around at the moment. There's a few less since the energy crisis, because a few hit the wall. But yeah, you can choose, in most of Australia, you can choose any electricity retailer you like. In places like Perth, you can't. In Tasmania, you've only got a choice of two. In regional Queensland, you don't have much choice either. And in the Northern Territory, you don't have a choice. But for the rest of Australia, you have a choice of dozens of companies. And like I say, one of the best ways to find out who would be cheapest is the government's Energy Made Easy website, which is really quite good these days.
Yeah. Donna from Canberra. Wow. Bragging rights, Donna. She's getting 45.7 cents per kilowatt hour in the ACT. Whoa. Yeah, she says she was lucky to get in early. Well, that's your prize for being an early adopter, isn't it? Now, a couple of questions. Peter's wondering, look, when will roof metal sheet material replace solar panels? I mean, I heard about technology to do that years and years ago, and I've always wanted, you know, that idea of, say, painting your roof with some kind of material that will actually harvest the sun's rays for you. Is that kind of technology in the works?
Yeah, that's what we call that BIPV, Building Integrated Photovoltaics. Their BlueScope Steel put out a press release a few years ago saying they were working on solar integrated into, you know, steel roofing. But then that disappeared and we didn't hear anything else from it. There's various people claiming they have developed solar paint, but I've never seen it used commercially. So there's people that make solar roof tiles. So that's solar cells embedded in the tiles and they're almost invisible. So there's a few and those are available in America. And there's also a company called Tractile that sells those tiles in Australia. They look very nice, but they are very expensive. So if you want to go down that route, your only option at the moment really is these solar tiles, which look fantastic, but they are very expensive.
When you say very expensive, what are we talking about?
Whereas you might pay $6,000 for regular solar panels, I think these are more like $20,000 to $30,000 for a similar size system. But the people that make the tiles would argue that you're getting a roof as well. So there is that.
That is true. So let's maybe just go back to some basics. If you are looking to save some money and thinking about solar, what are the first three things that you actually need to think about?
Your savings from solar, most people in Australia buying solar to save money, and your savings from solar is dependent on three main things. That's how much sun your roof gets. So that depends on where you are in Australia and which direction your roof's pointing. It depends on what electricity tariffs you're on. So that's how much you pay for electricity and how much you will get paid for your surplus solar. And the third critical thing is how much electricity you use during the day, because that's where most of your savings come from. They come from offsetting those expensive electricity tariffs by using solar instead. So, for example, I pay about 30 cents a kilowatt hour for my electricity, and on my home, I get about 10 cents for feeding solar into the grid. So I save three times as much by self-consuming my solar energy. So, does your roof get plenty of sun? If it's totally shaded by a big tree, that's a showstopper. There's no solar panels that will work in the shade.
Oh, really? Completely? Don't even think about it.
If it's heavily shaded.
Yeah, okay.
The best thing to do is, you might be surprised at how much sun a roof can get, even if there's a tree next to it. If you do have that problem, the best thing you can do is find a good solar installer. That solar installer can jump on your roof. He can get out a device called a sun eye that literally measures. Just by going on the roof once, you can measure how much sun falls on the roof throughout the whole year. And it does that by taking a 360-degree photograph of the shade structures and then working out where the sun is in the sky, you know, throughout the year. So it's really quite clever. And then he can give you a number. He or she, they can say, look, your roof will get 66% of the sun of an unshaded roof, and this will be your savings. And then you can make an informed decision about whether you want to get solar. So if you do have a shaded roof, try and find an installer that will do that analysis. And they should be able to do that for a couple of $100.
Yeah. Okay. So once you've decided that, then I guess it's time to look at what kind of system you're going to need. Most Australians will be probably living in a 2 to 3 bedroom home. What kind of panels or how many would you need for that size house?
So the biggest mistake I see at the moment is people buying a 6.6 kilowatt system, because those are the ones that are advertised on the TV and in the papers. But that's, for most Australians, that's probably too small if they want to make a serious dent in their usage. And looking to the future, that's probably too small, bearing in mind that most people in the next 5 years, most households are probably going to get an electric car and they use an enormous amount of electricity to charge up. So you've got to look at how much electricity you use, just look at your bills, but don't size it for a perfect summer's day. My best advice I can give is size your system so you'll have plenty of energy in winter. If you size it for an average day or a summer's day, in most parts of Australia where you actually have winter, you'll will be disappointed when winter comes and you haven't got enough energy.
So even on a cloudy day, assuming your roof's in a good position to get some sun, are you going to be getting anything from the sun? Or is it like when you have weather like you've had, I don't know if you've been following the weather in Sydney, Finn, but it's just been torrential rain for the past few days. You're not going to get anything then, are you?
You'll get something.
Really?
You'll get 10 to 15%, yes. On a really horrible day, you might get 5%, a really, really, really horrible day. But solar panels will work with what we call diffuse light, so you will get something. But absolutely, the weather on the East Coast for solar this year has been particularly horrible.
Yes, ironic then that everyone's rushing to get it just as the heavens are opening up. Okay, so you don't just say, I want a 6.6. You actually look at the amount of energy that you're going to be using, and you think about the future. If you're thinking, look, I'll put an aircon in a couple of years, or I'll be buying an electric car in a few years, take all that into account, you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. The future that I can see Australia going is everything's becoming more and more electrified. Our gas appliances are getting swapped out for electric appliances. We're using heat pumps to heat our homes instead of gas because it's almost four times more efficient. And then transport is going to electrify very, very quickly. So the thing about buying solar in Australia is the solar rebate, the national solar rebate, which is still very much alive and kicking, is you get paid per solar panel. And one of the most expensive things about installing solar is actually getting a solar installer to roll the truck, get the three or four guys on your roof to put the panels on. Once those guys are on your roof, it's actually surprisingly cheap to put as much solar on there as possible, unless you live in a mansion, because the rebate generally pays for the solar panel hardware and you're just paying for the installation.
So I assume that unless you're getting an amazing feed-in tariff, such as that 47 cents in Canberra, that you wouldn't want to put too much on either, would you?
It depends on the feed-in tariff. So if you're getting a 10-cent feed-in tariff, it still makes sense to put solar on, even if you're going to be exporting a lot of that. If you're getting a 2.5-cent feed-in tariff, then it doesn't. But then in Perth, you're not actually allowed to put more than 6.6 kilowatts on your roof and get the feed-in tariff. If you put more than that on, you're not eligible for the feed-in tariff. So, you have to think about that, but you also have to think about how much electricity you're going to get in winter. The other thing is, if the feed-in tariff goes really low, that's when people start being attracted to batteries, which is a whole other story.
And we will get there. Now, do your local councils have any say on whether you get to put solar on your roof, or is it just a done deal that you can ring up your blokes or your women and get them to come and put the panels on your roof?
It depends. Most people, you don't have to, most councils, they're very good about solar panels. The exception is if you live in a heritage area, you can have some special rules. So do be careful. I was talking to someone today and the council is forcing them to take three panels off their north-facing roof because they can see it from the street. But that is in a very specific heritage area. So for the vast majority of the population, the councils are all for it, and you don't need any permission from the council.
Now, Adrian wants to know, a year ago there were strings micro-inverters. Now there is a power optimizer. Any experience with them? That's sort of all Greek to me, but you probably know what that means.
Yeah, so the solar inverter is the box of electronics that sits on your wall. Solar panels produce DC electricity, that's a steady electricity, and the house uses AC electricity, which is a wiggly electricity, it goes up and down at 50 hertz. So the inverter is the box of electronics that converts the electricity from your solar panels to electricity your house can use. Now, a micro inverter is a special type of inverter. Instead of having one briefcase-sized box on your wall, you have a kind of paperback book-size inverter on each individual panel. One of the benefits of those is it optimizes each panel individually, to cut a long story short, and in certain situations should give you more energy. They're also more fault-tolerant because if one drops out, the rest of your system keeps working. So that's micro-inverters, and they've actually been around for well over a decade. They have a lot of advantages. The main disadvantage is they are very expensive. They're probably 20% more expensive on your system compared to a string inverter. Then there's power optimizers, which are a hybrid of the two. You still have the briefcase size inverter on your wall, but you have an individual optimizer on each panel. So you've got kind of both things, and that gives you the string inverter on your wall, and it also optimizes each panel individually. And that is more expensive than a string inverter, but not as expensive as micro inverters. Hope that makes sense.
All right, Adrian, I hope that helps. Now, just remind us, Finn, of the website that you were talking about, because we've had a couple of people say, what was that website that you go to put in sort of your power and figure out the best way to go?
So it's a government-run website, and it's called Energy Made Easy. Mm-hmm. If you just Google Energy Made Easy, you'll find it. It's electricity tariffs are getting so complicated now that it's almost impossible to compare them without a computer program. And yeah, the government's they've done a good job on this website, like I've said. And the very nice thing about it is, if you're a solar owner, you have a smart meter, and you can connect your meter directly to the website, and it can do it based on your actual consumption throughout the day. So that's really powerful.
Oh, good evening. Yeah, it's a very interesting conversation. I'm alone. I've got a pensioner, and I've got a 5.6 kilowatt system on my roof. That's the biggest I can put on. And I have a very small battery, about 2.6 or 2.8 kilowatt hours. But the problem is, of course, with that big expense, I did that so I could feed my air conditioning in summer and in winter. But the power companies seem to be reducing their feed-in tariff and upping their daily supply charge, which has happened to me through Origin. And my actual bills are going up all the time, whereas I used to be totally self-sufficient. Now I'm paying money out. Now, if we're going to be moving to renewable energy, what are they trying to do here? Are they trying to encourage people to take up solar, or are they punishing people like me who've spent the money and now they're, as I said, they're upping all the charges, reducing the feed-in tariff, but upping the other charges.
Finn?
Have you shopped around for a different retailer?
I have, and I've used that Energy Made Easy website. And when I write it all out, it's sort of, as I said, they give in one hand and take away with the other. If you get a high feed-in tariff, then you also got high supply charges. If you've got a low feed-in tariff, then they'll reduce the supply charge. So it's a bit of a lottery as to whether you go with one or the other. If you take the bait and go for a high feed-in tariff, then you'll be punished, as I put it, by having such a high supply charge. I'm over $2 a day now.
That's a very high supply charge.
I get 12 cents from them, but that's limited to 15 kilowatts a day, and after that it goes to 5 cents. In summer, I generate quite a lot, but in winter, it's overcast. We've had terrible weather here. It's cloudy, and I'd be lucky to charge my battery, let alone anything else.
Yeah.
Have you tried hitting the button, which is relatively new, where you can actually get the website to pull your meter data and tell you which retailer will give you the best balance of feed-in tariff and usage tariff based on your consumption and your exports?
Yes, I've done that. I've given them my national meter, whatever it is, NMI.
NMI, yeah.
Yes, I've entered that into the website, and they put that through their computer, then they spit out the results, as you've said. And when I analyse the results, as I said, they might give you something in one hand, but they take it with the other. But just the whole scenario of us as a nation going to renewable energy, they're punishing, I believe they're punishing people who've got solar.
Yeah, Bob, seems we've had a few people along this line talking about the tariff, the feed-in tariffs dropping and feeling very much the same way. Finn, any more advice for Bob, or has he sort of done all he could for now?
The rules are to get your bills down if you have solar, is move as much consumption to the middle of the day as possible when the sun's shining. That's quite a small battery. If you've moved as much consumption as possible to the middle of the day and you've found the cheapest retailer on Energy Made Easy using your actual consumption data and your export data, then the next thing to do is think about your home efficiency. 80% of your bills generally are heating and cooling in Australia, and that can be brought down substantially by looking at the thermal envelope of your home. By that, I mean your gaps, your glazing and your insulation and the efficiency of your heating and cooling.
So, look, I guess if you really can't do anything too much about the tariffs and all those external things, I guess do what you can in your home to change the way you're using that electricity. Thanks very much for your call, Bob. G'day, Larry in Broome. Hey, Larry.
Hello.
What's your question?
Oh, Am I on, am I?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Hey, Finn, love your work, mate. A great program. And all the people out there listening, all good stuff. Finn, I'm looking at designing a truck that's an electric truck. And I want to power that truck by solar, just totally. Now, I'm aware that there's new batteries coming into play in 2023, I believe, and they're cadmium-based and they're cadmium liquid and fibre and whatnot, but they're a new type of battery that we haven't seen in production as it is. I'm just wondering, is it possible to charge my batteries from complete solar without plugging in on the grid? Is there a system in place or is the technology there to do that? The truck I'm looking at is a Fuso chassis and it's designed by a company called SEA, which you're probably well aware of, SEA.
Yes.
And I'm looking at a cabin chassis. They're expensive. I'm looking at $185,000 just for the cab and the chassis, but I don't want to run it on the system of plugging in to the grid. Do you know anything about that? Also, while I'm talking, I know there's plenty of people out there want to talk. What is your company and where are you based? And can I look you up and follow this on later off air?
Okay, so the truck, so you want to basically cover the roof with solar panels and charge the truck's battery that way, is that right?
Well, the roof and maybe some extensions off the roof when I'm stationary to be able to charge myself without going near the grid, onto the grid, without going into a plug-in system. And I'm just saying, I know that you need a lot of solar panel, but I believe that with the new batteries that are coming out, which will be out in 23 apparently, they're a lot easier to charge, a lot quicker, and so on and so forth. So
your constraint's going to be the amount of light that's falling on the truck. So for every square meter, you know, rule of thumb, for every square meter of surface in Australia, you'll average about a kilowatt hour of energy per day. A kilowatt hour of energy on a truck will probably get you 4 kilometers. So, you know, how many square meters have you got on top of the truck? Maybe 10 square meters.
Something. Yeah, it'll basically, I've got the cabin chassis and then I'll build a back on it. It'll be so, like a...
Yeah, about 10, Larry?
Approximately.
Yep. So you may be able to average 10 kilowatt hours a day from the solar on the roof. Like I say, for every kilowatt hour, you may get 4 kilometres. So you, on a good day, you may be able to get a few tens of kilometres out of the solar on the roof. So it's, you know, you can get a few tens of kilometers a day. There's a car that's just been released called the Lightyear that claims it can go for months without charging if you, you know, drive it 30 or so kilometers a day. But that is $250,000 car.
Right. So if Larry doesn't have too far to travel every day, that might work. But it sounds like it's a bit of a challenge otherwise.
It's a very exciting challenge, but it would be cheaper to plug it in than build it, I think.
Yeah. All right, Larry. Look, good luck with that. A few comments and questions coming on the SMS. So someone says, look, are there small batteries that provide good value for money for single-person households with solar? And while we take that question, why don't we just, Finn, get really your assessment of where we're up with batteries at the moment? Because for years people have been saying, wait, they're still so expensive for what they can do. Where are we at now in the process of them becoming much more affordable?
Well, frustratingly, we're about the same place we were 5 years ago when everyone, including me, in the solar industry was saying, just give it 5 years and they'll be much cheaper. So very frustratingly, home batteries aren't really coming down in price yet, which is perplexing.
What are the constraints on that?
Well, it's really interesting, isn't it? The battery cells, pretty much the same that go in cars, are coming down in price, you know, every year, and car batteries are coming down, but the home batteries are stubbornly expensive. All I can put it down to is it's a much smaller market and it's a much less mature market, and the manufacturers are being careful about what they charge, because they have to put some money aside for warranties, because home batteries have only really been sold in anger in the last 5 or 6 years, and these batteries generally come with a 10-year warranty. So it's a bit of an unknown what, how many people will be claiming on warranties, you know, in 8, 9, 10 years' time. So, yeah, it's frustrating that home batteries aren't getting any cheaper. All the effort seems to be in the car batteries.
Yeah, and so for the one-person household who is thinking, you know, I've got solar, should I get a battery? Is it worth it or not?
It depends what you want the battery for. So batteries are, solar's fantastic at getting your bills to a certain level. Then batteries are really effective at getting your bills even lower. Batteries are really good at backing up your house if you have a blackout. I had a short blackout today. My battery kicked in. Batteries are really good at insulating you from electricity price rises, because if you don't draw much from the grid, you don't really care how much you're getting charged for electricity. The downside is they're a very expensive way to get your bills down, and they still are. So
what are we looking at now for a battery? Say for the person who's saying, look, for a one-person household.
Yeah, so it's about batteries are sized in kilowatt hours. That's how much energy they store in kilowatt hours. So it's about $1,000 per kilowatt hour installed. So a small battery would be about 6 kilowatt hours. That would cost ballpark about $6,000 installed. The big batteries, like the Tesla Powerwall 2, which is 13 and a bit kilowatt hours, they cost over $15,000 installed. So they're expensive.
And are there rebates available for batteries in the home?
There isn't a national rebate, but there are state-level rebates. So there's a battery rebate. The most generous one is in the Northern Territory, which is up to $6,000. ACT, Victoria and SA also have battery rebates, although if you want to use the battery rebate in South Australia, be quick, because the new Labor government is ditching it in September, I think.
All right, there you go, South Australia. Some good advice for you. Now, what, and again, was the name of the device? This is from Darren, that the solar installer can use to test the amount of sun you get on your roof.
Okay, so there's a device called a Sun Eye.
Sun Eye, that's nice, isn't it? Nice little name. Okay, and then we've got Anne. She says, have you got any advice on solar for apartment blocks? We're a block of 9. We love solar. We've looked at SolShare. Any other options or advice?
Yeah, so SolShare is a good solution to that. It depends. If you're getting solar on an apartment, it depends on who else in the apartment wants solar. So I've got an investment property that's an apartment, and there's 4 people in the unit, and we just had a chat with the other 3 owners, and they agreed that we could have a quarter of the roof to put the solar on. And so we did that, and we wired the solar into our apartment, and that was all good. I know other people that have actually drawn up contracts where they actually lease some of the roof for their solar, just for their use. And then the other option is, if you get everyone together and everyone wants solar, then you can have a shared solar system. SolShare is probably the best solution for that, although it is fairly expensive. The other options is to put the solar into the common area, and that reduces the bills for everyone as well. Otherwise it starts to get quite complicated if you have to split the solar off many different ways into everyone's meters. So if it's only you and you can negotiate to have part of the roof for your solar, that works well.
Thanks for that question, Ange. Now, someone else says, look, many suburbs won't let you have any feed-in at all because the feed-in is capped, because the grid won't cope with all the feed-in in so many suburbs. Is that right?
Yeah, that is right. In a few parts of Australia, you apply to connect your solar and you get told that you can't feed in anything. That's called a zero export limit. It used to be a big problem in parts of Victoria, although the installers over there tell me that is getting much better. But yes, in some parts of Australia, it's not that common these days, but you may get hit with a zero export limit, which means
matter how much
they
the feed-in is.
They don't let you export into the grid. So that's when people start looking at batteries, because that, if you're getting paid zero for your surplus solar, that improves the returns on a battery substantially.
So are we going to, I mean, we know that the new government's saying we really do need to look at the grid, and that's been talked about for some time now. Are we hopefully going to get to a situation where the grid is upgraded so that we won't have to see caps on people feeding their solar back into the grid?
Yeah, we have to. It has to happen. So there's a big project to upgrade the grid, but that's for the mega scale renewable energy projects, the big solar farms and the big wind farms. But absolutely, we have to make the most of our rooftops. And the more renewable generation we've got, and a huge part of that is rooftop generation, the less storage we're going to need when we move towards 100% renewable. So absolutely, the grid has to be upgraded. And that's, if you're talking about residential solar, you're not talking about the transmission network, you're talking about upgrading the distribution network. And that, yeah, well, that needs to be upgraded so people can basically fill their roofs with solar if we want to get to 100% renewable grid.
Finn Peacock, solar expert, is here with me on Nightlife, where we're going through some of your questions. Now, someone is just saying that the Energy Made Easy website doesn't work for Victorian customers.
Yes. So you've got your own, Victoria like to do things themselves. You've got a website called Victorian Energy Compare or Vic Energy Compare, and that does a similar thing.
Okay, so all you Victorians, you go there. Everyone else can go to Energy Made Easy. Don in Brisbane, hello.
Finn, solar quotes, fantastic. I've spent many hours perusing all the information on there. Look, I have one specific question that has to do with using moving your hot water from off-peak to a single or a variable tariff, but putting it on a timer that's run off the solar during the day, potentially say from 10 in the morning to 2 o'clock, something like that. Does it work? And is there enough power generated in solar during the day to cope with the element when it's turned on?
So that depends on what kind of solar what kind of electric hot water system you've got and how big your solar system is and where you live.
Okay. Southeast Queensland,
yep.
6.6, for example,
yep.
It's a small hot water system.
So that will be a conventional hot water system with a 3.6 kilowatt element?
Look, I'm not sure. It's an old Saxon, so it's an old Australian brand.
It's probably a 3.6 kilowatt element. That means to be powering that system exclusively from solar, your system needs to be generating more than 3.6 kilowatts. So if you have monitoring on your system, you can have a look through the year and see typically when your system hits about 3.6 and then when it drops off in the afternoon from 3.6. The other alternative you've got, instead of a simple timer, is you can get devices called hot water diverters, although they do cost about $1,000. And those are quite clever. What they do is they actually look at how much surplus solar you've got, and then they only use that solar to power your hot water system. And they do that by kind of chopping it up and turning it into what's called a pulse width modulated signal going into your element. But it's a very clever way of kind of scavenging the surplus solar, even if you haven't got the 3.6 kilowatts, and using that to heat your water. And they're quite effective, although that is about $1,000 investment. The other alternative is to swap out your conventional hot water system for a heat pump hot water system. Again, that's expensive. You're talking $3,000 to $6,000, but that is about four times more efficient. So that will use four times less solar energy to heat the same amount of water. And that will easily cope with being on a timer between 11 o'clock and about 2 o'clock in Southeast Queensland.
Yeah. All right, Don, thank you very much. Hope that's helped you out. Paul is in Bardwell Valley. Hello, Paul.
Oh, hi. Look, I have a very old system which was generously paid for by the government on RECs at the time, I think it was, renewable energy certificates.
Yep.
My question is, it's so old, it doesn't feed into the house that I can use the energy that I generate. Am I better off just buying a new system, one that does allow me to use the energy that's generated?
So how old is this system?
Oh, 10 years old.
Okay, so
To the best of my knowledge, I can only feed out. I can't use the energy generated.
Are you in New South Wales?
New South Wales.
Yeah, so about 10 years ago, New South Wales had what's called a gross feed-in tariff, and that was you got paid for everything you generated. You got paid a very generous rate per kilowatt hour for everything you generated, whether you exported it or not. But that feed-in tariff was ditched many years ago. You'll have a small solar system, I'm thinking, probably 1.5 kilowatts.
Exactly, yep.
It probably does offset your home use. You just don't realise it, but it's probably not much because it's such a small system. Look, long story short...
We're not big users. So, like I said, would I be better off getting a new system that feeds into my house as well as exports rather than keep the one that I've got and maybe up it a little bit in size?
I'd be very confident that your system does feed into your house. You could get someone to come and check it out. But it's such a small system, you know, it may not be working properly. That's might be why you're not noticing that. But generally, for a system that old and that small, it's actually cheaper. I know this sounds terrible to actually ditch the old system and put a brand new system on, because systems in the last 10 years have become about 80% cheaper. And it's much easier to install if they just get rid of the old system and put a new one on from scratch.
All right. Look, Paul, hopefully that will help you. Now, someone says, are you familiar with something called the NEM Watch widget?
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, my texter promises that everyone will be very interested in this. Can you tell us what it is?
So NEM Watch is a website that tells you in real time where the electricity on the grid is coming from. So you can drill down into by state and see that, you know, 20% from solar, 15% from wind, 60% from coal in real time. So it's just a very interesting insight into where our energy is coming from at that moment in time.
Oh, so this is why a follow-up text from Keith a couple of SMSs later is that at this minute, 70% of power in New South Wales is coming from coal. There you go.
That's probably about right, yes.
Yeah. Helen in Gosford, hello, welcome.
Oh, good evening. Thanks for the discussion. We've got good lithium batteries on board our caravan, which I'm just not sure of the exact kilowatt hours it generates, but I suspect it may be about 10, because we can run microwave, coffee machine, that sort of thing when we're out in the van. I'm wondering, conceptually, could that be used as our backup battery for our home in times when there's blackouts?
So in theory, absolutely, it's a battery. You can, in theory, connect it to an inverter on your house that takes that energy and feeds it into your home. The problem there is the regulations. To connect a battery to the grid in Australia, you need to use a battery that's been approved by the Clean Energy Council, and I don't know if the battery on your caravan is on that list. Yeah. It probably isn't. Well, so it's technically you can do it, and if you had an off-grid home, you could do it and no one could stop you. But if your home's connected to the grid, which I assume it is, you're going to run into regulatory hurdles.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Finn. And will that be the same for electric vehicles in time? We'd be able to have them as a battery for our home, as opposed
to... absolutely. The future, there's going to be so much storage rolling around on wheels that it's inevitable that when those cars are parked in our driveways or even parked at work, we will plug them into the grid, and they will be so valuable to support the grid that will happen. At the moment, it's very hard to do again because you have to get all the approvals to do that. It's not a common thing. But the future absolutely will be all these electric cars plugged into the grid, supporting the grid, buying cheap electricity and discharging expensive electricity. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Helen. Let's go to San Matty now in Box Hill. Hi, San Matty.
Yeah, hi. How are you? I'm just a new house owner living in Box Hill, Sydney. Just want to take your advice how many kilowatts I might need to put into the new house. It's a single-phase house, about 400 square meters, 27 square meters of land. It's a built area, sorry.
So how big is your family?
We are only two of us now.
Okay.
It's a four-bedroom house.
Are you at home during the day?
My wife is working from home, so she probably runs a little bit of aircon. And yeah, that's what.
Do you have a pool?
No, we don't have a pool.
Are you planning on getting an electric car in the near future?
Probably.
Okay. So, look, the standard 6.6 kilowatt system would, in the short term, would probably be very effective. But as soon as you get an electric car, you'll probably find that that's not enough. You'll probably be frustrated because when you plug an electric car into your home on a hardwired charger, that starts to pull 7 kilowatts. So 6.6 kilowatts will be fine in the short term. If you want to think to the future, think about going bigger, maybe 10, 11, because the cheapest time to do that is when you get the solar system installed. Because like I said earlier, once the team's on your roof, it's surprisingly efficient to add more panels due to the way the solar rebate works.
All right, so Matty, thanks for that. Now, if Finn, you are deciding, look, now is the time, I would imagine if a lot of people are investigating solar, you'll have a lot of the solar installers who are very busy, and you might end up being tempted to go with someone who doesn't have a great reputation just because they're available. How do you find a good solar installer? Are there particular certificates or that you need to look for?
Well, that's a really good question. So the solar industry, because Australia's had this incredibly successful solar rebate scheme, that when there's, in inverted commas, free money from the government floating around, even though technically it's not free money from the government, that does attract the cowboys to make a quick buck. So you do have to be careful there. It's not as bad as it used to be, but there are still some pretty unscrupulous solar companies around, and there's two kinds. There's the one that charge way too little to be able to do a proper job, in my opinion, and there's the ones that charge way too much. So the way to protect yourselves against the ones that charge way too much is to get multiple quotes. The way to protect yourself against the ones that charge way too little, it's really very simple. Don't buy the cheapest solar system you can find on the internet because you're asking for trouble. If you're evaluating solar companies, Google is your friend. Go online, look for their reviews. If they haven't got many reviews online, just find a company that has. And if they have got lots of reviews online, one really good way to catch out the dodgy guys is to look at multiple review sites. So look at Google reviews, look at Facebook reviews, look at product review, look at my website, Solar Quotes, and look if they've got consistent ratings across all those sites. If one of those companies has a really good rating on one site and pretty average ratings on the other sites, that's a sign that they're gaming one of the review sites, which is unfortunately fairly easy to do. So, watch out for that.
All right. I might just see if I can squeeze Ben in very quickly in Bunbury. Ben, if you could ask your question pretty quickly, please.
Ben? Yeah, no worries. I'll try. Yeah, I'm here. Finn, I'm just wondering, two-part question. One, why am I limited to 6.6 kilowatts? And secondly, is the feed-in tariff calculated as a net value across the period of your bill, or is it an instantaneous thing?
Okay, so I'll answer the second one first because that's easy. The feed-in tariff is calculated instantaneously for all intents and purposes. So that's calculated in real time. Where do you live?
Just south Bunbury in Cape.
Right, so you're probably not limited to 6.6 kilowatts, but you're probably limited to a 5-kilowatt export. So it depends where you are. Some people.
But isn't it in Western Australia you said there was a limit on how much you can put on the roof?
Yes. So in Perth, if you install more than a 5-kilowatt inverter, they won't pay you a feed-in tariff. So if you want to forego the feed-in tariff, you can
So you can put more on, you just won't get a feed-in tariff for it.
That's right. You still need permission, special permission to put that solar on. So assuming you get that, you can put more solar on, and if you have high self consumption, that can be worth it.
And if to add to that first part, if I use 100 units of electricity and I generate 100, I still get charged for the 100 that I used, even though it balances out at zero.
You have to use that electricity at the same time as your solar is generating. So if you use half of it at night, the solar won't cover that. So you'll get paid nothing for your exports in WA if you have bigger than a 5 kilowatt inverter.
All right. Ben, sorry to hear you've got some regulatory hurdles to cross there. Finn, we are about out of time. Thank you so much for being with us on Nightlife once again and taking people's questions on solar. Good luck with all the business that I think is coming your way as Australians rush to put solar on their roofs at the moment.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right. That is Finn Peacock. He is the author of The Good Solar Guide. He runs the website Solar Quotes. Joining us from the Adelaide studio in Nightlife tonight.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.